Welcome to the Geekcentric Podcast, and welcome to our spoiler-free review for Fallout. Well now, that is a very small drop in a very, very large bucket of drugs.
Welcome, Vault Dwellers, to the Geekcentric Podcast. My name is Nate, and this is our spoiler-free review for Fallout. Special thanks, as always, to our friends at Prime Video Canada for letting us watch this series early for review. If you're joining us for the first time, we are Geekcentric, a podcast focusing on the world of movies, TV shows, video games, and all things Geekcentric. Now, before I get to who's joining us for this review, first, a word from our sponsor, Nuka-Cola. Whether you're exploring the wasteland or kicking back at home, Nuka-Cola is the ultimate companion for every occasion. Don't settle for ordinary. Grab a Nuka-Cola and taste the difference today.
Joining me for this apocalyptic review, he's a wastelander who's traveled far and wide, from the desolate ruins of Washington, D.C. to the irradiated expanses of the Mojave. He's braved it all. He's Darcy, the dog-meat-loving Hazardous Hudson.
Hello, hello.
And when I say dog meat loving, I mean, obviously, you don't
the
actually...
dog, not the actual meat of a dog. I understood what you're getting. Going
you,
at.
You would never eat dog meat, right?
God, no. Not knowingly.
Yeah, maybe it was like snuck into a meal or something. Try this jerky. Oh, okay.
Post-apocalyptic world, someone's cooking meat and they're like, hey, have some of this. Yeah. I'm pretty sure I'd probably be hungry enough to say, yeah, why not? And afterwards... probably regret that decision.
Oh man, well, how are you doing? Are your rad levels are good? Do you need some rad away?
Yeah, no, I'm doing good. Haven't been out in the where the radiation's too hot recently. Okay. So I'm doing pretty good.
Good.
I'm excited to talk about this show, that's for sure.
Yeah man, I mean, we're talking about a Fallout TV show, which is crazy. Like, the game's debuting all the way back in 1997, and here we are talking about the latest story in this universe. Before we get to this review, Darcy, what's your journey with Fallout look like?
I mean, I was a later addition to the Fallout universe. I'm pretty mm-hmm. sure like a lot of people were. The first two games kind of came out before the console wars kind of took over. So, but I definitely played a lot of Fallout New Vegas and Fallout 3. I fell in love with those games almost instantly. And I remember that was a game that me and my buddy were playing together at the same time on his console. And we were taking turns to get to the point where before we were starting a new file, we mapped out each level, what perk we would take and what we would put our points into so that we could have the best build for our characters. And it's one of the most fun I've ever had playing a single player game alongside someone else. It was so much fun.
That's awesome. Yeah. When you get to, it's funny how like that probably isn't a way that Bethesda anticipated people would play their games, but the idea of sort of sharing that journey with someone else.
Oh yeah, and again, mapping it out. We went level by level before we even picked up the controller and started a file. We're like, this is what I'm going to do for each thing and where I'm going to go first in the game, because this is like both of our fifth or sixth times playing Fallout 3. But the universe is so much fun to dive into. It's such a unique spin on this alternate history / alternate future based off that history, where again nuclear fusion is all the rad, and it's such a unique universe that I always love diving back into. And I gotta say, this show does a great job of bringing it to life on the screen.
Oh, totally. But I think you know, and we're going to talk about the storytelling of the show, but I think the storytelling of the game, I think that speaks volumes that you would want to sit next to someone as they play the game, right? I think it's cool how we've, you know, by the 360 generation, we kind of got to that place where it was like, oh no, we're watching a movie as someone else.
Yeah, they became
the
stories that you're experiencing. And I remember I was talking to you about it before when you had just started watching the show, and I mentioned how what I loved about Fallout is that it was on the same level or kind of like Mass Effect, in that the decision you make early in the game kind of shaped the way the end of the game goes. Mm-hmm. And again, it's all a testament to the storytelling, because each time you play that game, you could choose a different ending essentially for the game, or which route you want to take your character on. So it so much replayability in that factor, because the universe is so rich and has so many different ways you can go about surviving on this wasteland. It is so much fun.
Yeah, man. I gotta say, I think Fallout 3, besides, there was a mobile game for Fallout that had come out.
Yeah, Fallout Shelter, I think.
Right. I played a little bit of that when it popped, because I think it was on iPhone, and I was like mm-hmm. getting into it. But
one of those idle base building games. Yeah.
Yeah, it was fun. But I think Fallout 3 was the only one that I'd spent, I guess, a significant amount of time. I mean, to any Fallout player, I don't think 6 hours is a significant amount of time at all.
You're not getting enough of the story there, my friend.
Not nearly enough. So, you know, it's funny. I think after watching the show, I think we both have sort of had the feelings of like, okay, we got to play a Fallout game. And so is there a Fallout game you'd recommend for our listeners to get back into? Because I know the latest one isn't as well received.
76 is not the best. It is, again, they went that MMO route, which kind of lost some of the charm that made Fallout Fallout, which was that you're a singular sole survivor exploring the wasteland. If I'm going to suggest one game, it's got to be New Vegas. That one it's not your norm. It's not in the main Fallout storyline, but it is so much Fallout at its core. Like, you really get to understand some of the politics behind this world that after 200 years of post-apocalyptic nuclear wastelands type thing. So it's really cool. Fallout New Vegas and Fallout 3 are the top two games in the series, in my opinion.
Okay. All right. Well, I know what I'm going to check out then after this review. But before we get shot in slow motion with a doll's foot causing our eyeballs to explode, Darcy, let me get to the synopsis for this series. Based on one of the greatest video game series of all time, Fallout is the story of haves and have-nots in a world in which there's almost nothing left to have. 200 years after the apocalypse, the gentle denizens of luxury Fallout shelters are forced to return to the irradiated hellscape their ancestors left behind and are shocked to discover an incredibly complex, gleefully weird, and highly violent universe waiting for them. I think all those words are perfect. This series is run by showrunners Geneva Robertson Dworet and Graham Wagner, and executive producers Jonathan Nolan, Lisa Joy, Athena Wickham, James Altman, and Bethesda executive director Todd Howard. It stars Ella Purnell, Walton Goggins, Aaron Moten, Moises Arias, Kyle MacLachlan, Sarita Chowdhury, Michael Emerson, Leslie Uggams, Francis Turner, Dave Register, Zach Cherry, Johnny Pemberton, Rodrigo Luzzi, Annabelle O'Hagan, and Zelia Mendez-Jones. Fallout debuts on Prime Video originally April 11th, but Darcy, they surprised everyone and moved it up a day. So it's actually streaming April 10th, which is today if you're listening to this review as of its release. So, you know, I know some people love to listen to, you know, these spoiler-free reviews. We are going to keep this very spoiler-free, but, you know, I know some people like to go in completely without anything. And so if you've already done that and you're coming back to this review and listening, or maybe you're halfway through the show, hopefully you'll enjoy it. And if you haven't seen it, hopefully this just gets you hyped too, because I feel like we're going to have some really good things to say. Let's get into this. And I kind of want to start with the look and feel, the vibe of this show. I think, right away, they're nailing it with the visuals in this show. I think everything feels like it was perfectly brought over from at least what I remember of the games and from what I know of that world. And the fact that you have Todd Howard from Bethesda working on the show as an executive producer, I think it just really, I think there's a key element that he's bringing to help keep this show authentic. And I think Jonathan Nolan and Lisa Joy, they're capturing the look and feel of these games so well.
I could not agree with you more. Again, as soon as you turn on this show, you feel like you're watching an open cut scene of the game. It is such a stunning intro to the world and the way they bring it to life. Like you said, the fact that Todd is on the team, he's bringing attention to detail that is really necessary when you're exploring this world because it is so rich. And again, that whole premise of this this alternate history and then building up 200 plus years of story off of that is so special. And they're doing a great job of bringing it to the screen here.
Yeah, man. I think one of the big things that I've noticed with these, I guess, video game adaptations is that I think the most important part, more than even the story, is the vibes. It is the feeling that you get from the original game into the show. And I think, you know, look at, you know, Craig Mazin and Neil Druckmann, you know, Neil Druckmann, the director of The Last of Us, the video game series, working with Craig on the show and just how well they were able to capture that vibe. I do really think that, you know, if there was a world where we got The Last of Us and it wasn't the story from the first game, I think it would have been still just as successful as what we got was. And I think the same thing can be said about Fallout. I think the way that they were able to really just kind of give us a world that feels so lived in And so, like, it just feels so real. They filmed parts of the show in New Jersey, New York, and Utah, but as well as Namibia. And, you know, I think the practicality of using real, like, on locations really afford the show, again, that really sort of lived in world that Fallout has, right? It just kind of really, I mean, there's green screen in certain sequences. You can definitely tell, I think, if mm-hmm. you're looking close enough. It's still, you know, this is a very high budget show, but it's still a show. It's still a streaming show. It's not going to have the same budget as a movie. So you're still going to see those. But man, when we get those like desert scenes or forest sequences, or just sequences across like a bridge, like it just feels so real, and it feels like you're right there in the nasty, brutal, disgustingness of the wasteland.
Yeah, for sure. Again, I think it comes like you were saying that if we got Last of Us without focusing on that story, you could just still enjoy the show. I feel like Fallout goes even further with that because it is such a personal experience. Mm-hmm. As long as the world they set up and establish feels like the games, then you're going to enjoy the story because it's like a sequel to the series that we already love. And that's essentially what this series is, because it doesn't draw on anything from the games in terms of story, but it's still building upon all that rich lore that they've packed into all these games over all the years. So it's so much fun. And these on-location shots, like you're saying, they give such depth to the thing. You can tell they're not on a green screen and they're actually walking across these sands or these desolate wastes almost. And it feels so much realer, like you said, because again, they're actually there walking through these locations. So it was beautiful to watch.
So good. And it's so appreciated again that they, you know, I think these set designers and these prop designers and costume designers, like, you can tell there every ounce of heart was there. And I don't know if, how many of those individuals have played the games or grew up with the games, but you get the sense that they absolutely did, whether they did or didn't. And I think it just, again, it speaks to the fans who have grown up with the show, but also to everyone who are grown up with the games, but to everyone who maybe is coming into this brand new, it is very unique and very different, I think, than what a lot of people have seen in the past from, you know, an apocalyptic alternate history. You know, I love how you put it, like an alternate history, alternate future show. And we got to talk about the combat. I think the action is perfect. I mean, I remember we talked in the car about, I didn't really fully wrap my head around the VAT system, but one thing that I did love about the VAT system was the slow motion hyper violence, and we're getting that here.
Yeah, 100%. Again, the first time it slows down and you get, you know, the head exploding from a bullet going through it or whatever, like, this is from the game. I just got that 100% shot with my VATs. It's working perfectly. It took me right back to those first few moments of again, understanding VATs and how to go about, you know, killing in this nuclear wasteland. So the combat in this show is incredible. Again, the great thing about Fallout I always love is the fact that there's always that underlying tone of dark humor where they make fun of the most horrible situations. And it's just, it's so much fun. I like, you shouldn't be having fun when you're witnessing or experiencing these things, but the way that they tell the story is just so over the top and in your face. I love it. It's exactly what Fallout is to me. So the action, again, just nails it even more.
Well, and I think, you know, getting shot with like a doll part, for instance, right? And
yes. It just, yeah,
it's those little things, the contrast that you have between the silly and the funny and the brutal and the dark. And I think it's, you know, I will say it at no point in time, as violent as it is, it never felt unnecessary or too much. Like, I think back to another video game adaptation, the Doom movie, back in 2005 with The Rock. And I just remember, I didn't even watch the movie because I had heard at the time that there was so much wrong with it. But I remember the trailer having such a huge focus on the first person aspect, like the first person view, to you know, pay homage to the games. But apparently it was so overused that it just felt really cheesy and silly and unnecessary. And I think so many other creators could have seen what Fallout did and could have gone down the path of making it, you know, cheesy and overtly gory. But this show, I think, manages to still stay hyper violent, but it still feels balanced. Like, I, at no point in time was I ever taken out by the goriness, if you will.
Yeah, again, it goes to show they set up this world where, again, anything goes in the wasteland. You do what you can to survive, and this is after a great war has already happened. So these weapons of mass destruction are available to everyone, basically, at this point. So that's why it doesn't, you don't take it out of it. And again, not every kill is in that slow-mo. It, again, feels like the game where you're saving vats for those more tricky encounters, but your everyday, oh, a couple bandits, I don't need to go into slow-mo for this type thing. So right. It really, again, it finds that balance between the hyper-gory violence plus that just, you know, apocalyptic vibe. It just, everything about it works so well and just lends itself to this game's universe.
The Knights of the Brotherhood of Steel look, I mean, if you've seen the trailer, they look perfect. They look phenomenal. But I think my favorite thing about them is how heavy and slow and how
sound,
much weight
just,
there
oh.
is.
Yeah, every time you hear a step, you hear everything going through that suit to make them step. And then every footfalls land so hard with those things. It's so cool.
And I think that's a big thing with it because, I'm going to go under the assumption that certain sections with them are CG. I mean, I know that Aaron, who plays Maximus in the series, does talk about in interviews. He has talked about wearing kind of the top portion of those costumes, how heavy they are, and that there have been full suits because we've saw one at the Video Game Awards. Mm-hmm. So they do exist. But, you know, obviously in certain action sequences, they are CG. But again, because of the combination of the Foley, the sound, and the way how heavy they make them look, it just grounds them in reality, and it makes mm-hmm. them feel so scary. Like, so there's some scenes where they're not even doing it; they're just standing there. But if they walk a little closer to a character, you're like, oh my gosh, like there might as well just be a gun pointed at that character's head.
Oh yeah, for sure. Again, just like I said, they're just standing there and they're just kind of shifting or balancing on their feet. And you hear the whirring of all those gears in that suit going. And again, it makes you feel like that thing is actually there and real type thing, even though it is just a green screen scene or a CG or whatever. It's, again, the Foley goes a long way to bringing the suits to life, and they did a great job.
I want to get into the music. I think first thing I wrote down in my notes, the very first thing, was just how perfect the music is in this show. Both the cinematic score from Raman Djawadi, who obviously worked on Westworld with Jonathan Nolan, as well as all the incredible songs from the 30s, the 40s. We've got the Castells, we've got Scatman Crothers, Bing Crosby, Sheldon Allman, but the iconic sound when you think of Fallout comes from the Ink Spots, and
100%.
They're featured way more than just their most memorable track, which is "I Don't Want to Set the World on Fire," which was used to mostly promote Fallout 3. Mm-hmm. But you know, I think the amount of times that we got the Ink Spots I love that. I was very happy with
it. It felt like at least once an episode we were getting an Ink Spot song. And you brought it up, you know, when you were, again, talking about it as you were just getting into the show, about how all their songs sound the same and how, again, it fits the vibe of Fallout Universe so well. When you look at all these songs we're talking about, they're all very nihilistic views, like, oh, the world is ending, but I want to be happy on my own terms as we go out type thing. And that just, again, even though that is in the history of the show as well, the fact that the stuff they're singing about doesn't actually come to fruition in our universe, but did in the Fallout universe, is just, it's so great how they're managing to pull from these, again, real world songs that just fit the universe so well. And just, again, adds to the layers of it. Cause I talked about why those songs are so popular in the Fallout universe. And it's because entertainment was basically put on hold because the war was so important. Mm-hmm. So where we got to see leaps and bounds in our entertainment industry and Hollywood and stuff like that, that kind of just froze and stagnated after the 30s because the war was such a predominant focus. And it's so cool to see how they, again, managed to bring that to the screen flawlessly. And you, anytime one of those songs tunes up, it brings a smile to your face as you are pairing this bittersweet, you know, ballads or songs with these, again, kooky, crazy wasteland scenes. It's so good.
Yeah, I think the music, it does for this show what it did for the games, right? It gives mm-hmm. that eerie vibe of, like you said, like an America that's trapped in a very hopeful apple pie, brass band, cowboy thumbs up state. And then it, you contrast that, you're right, with the, like, the brutality of the world outside the vaults. And that's the vibe. Like, that is the vibe, that's that magic special sauce that I think makes Fallout Fallout. And it's so, I was just so happy that they just used so much of those songs and from that era. It's just such a perfect choice to showcase the hopefulness of the vault dweller. And, you know, that vault dweller that we focus on for the most part in this series is Lucy. Let's talk about some of these performances in the show. I want to start with Ella Purnell. I think she's so good in this role. She's so charming. I know her. The only other role that I've really seen her in is on Yellow Jackets, where she plays the character Jackie in that show, who is like, you know, it's about, the show's about a soccer team that gets stuck. They get trapped basically in the northern wilderness and horrible, horrible things happen. It's not a show for the light of heart, but but, you know, Jackie in that show is confident and in control, and for the most part she's pure, but then there's also this ambiguous nature to her character that you can sort of see. Whereas with Lucy, she is as pure as you can get. She's naive. Yeah. She's way too trusting. And she just follows these rules, the you know, the golden rules that were instilled in her growing up in Vault 33. And I think Ella Purnell is playing Lucy perfectly. We get to see her on this journey start to crack as she becomes clearly, like, visibly frustrated with the wasteland and with everything that she wasn't prepared for, even though she thought she was prepared. And I think Ella has such a good way at, through just her facial expressions, showing the process of her, like, taking in these moments, like, actually showing her thinking about what's going on and processing the ridiculousness of what's around her. She's perfect in this role, and I was so happy when I learned that she was going to be in the show.
Yeah, I'm not that familiar with her work. I think I know she was in Kick-Ass 2. I think that's the only thing that I can remember that I've seen that she was in, and it was such a small role it's almost forgettable in Kick-Ass 2. Whereas she is standout in this series. She is so likable because of her naivety and the fact that she's treated as that window into this post-apocalyptic world, and we probably align more with her views on things than a lot of these wastelanders do after 200 years of living in the wasteland. So she does a great job of, again, providing that entry into this wasteland, and how she deals with it and how it affects her as she changes and goes on this journey is incredible. She did a great job of playing, you know, one of these vault dwellers coming to the surface for the first time. So I loved it.
And then I think on the other side of this story, you have Aaron Moten playing Maximus. And he is kind of like the opposite of Lucy in a lot of ways. I think, he lies a lot. He's you know, raised as a member of the Brotherhood of Steel who, you know, I think he kind of sees lying as a means of survival because he has to. And it's
the wasteland. Anything goes.
Yeah.
Just survive. That's the only goal.
And he's, you know, I love that they have that sort of duality between them, right? Again, with Lucy being so trusting, it's kind of perfect for a character like Maximus. But I also think that, like, I like that Maximus is not this, like, superhero type character, right? He's insecure. He shows his fear, and he shows his immaturity. And I think that's what makes, you know, obviously seeing him kind of go through this journey and eventually get to the other side of some of those things so much more rewarding, right? Mm-hmm. We get to sort of see where he starts and ends. And I think Aaron did an excellent job with that.
100%. Again, the Brotherhood of Steel was brought to the screen so well, and it's through his lens that we're seeing this faction that's religious and military kind of combined. And it's, again, his struggles in everything he does, you understand why he's doing it, because, again, this is a cutthroat world they're living in, and you understand why he's going to the lengths he's going to lie and kind of get to the top or get to safety, if you will. So, yeah, he does a great job at bringing this character to life. Again, all the characters in the show are so well thought out, and you understand a lot of their motivations just after a short time of meeting them, because, again, these actors are doing such a good job of bringing them to life.
You mentioned religious military. That's honestly, it's like, what if the Catholic Church and the U.S. Army became one?
Yeah,
like
yeah.
that is absolutely the Brotherhood of Steel. And, mm-hmm. and wow, yeah, that's okay. But we have to talk about Walton Goggins. I mean, I think he was probably my most highly anticipated aspect of this show. I think he's the most interesting character on the show. And I love how we get to learn about the history of the world through his character. Mm-hmm. We're getting these flashbacks to see his journey and how we get to sort of break down the mysteries behind the apocalypse. And then to your point, like the alternate history, alternate future, to get to see him on the other side as this ghoul. So good.
Yeah. Again, Walton Goggins as a gunslinger in the post-apocalyptic wasteland is reason enough to watch the show, because he is does such a good job of again nailing that, you know, again, gunslinger vibe in the Wild West, but the Wild West happens to be all irradiated and there's mutants and everything everywhere.
Yeah,
it's a delight. Again, the quote at the top of the episode was one of his, and he is at least once an episode dropping on a line that's just like, damn, he nailed that. Oh, like
so many good
once
one-liners.
An episode, so many good one-liners. Yeah. He is the best Western hero in this apocalyptic wasteland, and it's so much fun. And like you said, where he's another viewpoint into the past of the world, mm-hmm. and the fact that they do that so flawlessly throughout the show, where they bounce between current times, where we're seeing the post-war, all that stuff, and then going before the bombs dropped, and that how they bounce between the two is so seamless and flawless, and it peels back the layers just as you want to get a bit more answers. They're like, oh, here we go. We'll go into that a bit later on. And again, the fact that it's Walton Goggins on both ends is a wicked way to experience the story.
And I got to give shout out to the makeup team on this show and him. And I think the other thing that I love is, again, so many creators and so many people could have gone the direction with his makeup to make it full mask or full CG. And the fact that we're getting this sort of really close to Walton Goggins' face, mm-hmm. just with these sort of additions. My favorite thing is that you're keeping his original eyes. And
yes.
I think that's where we can see that's having him be able to maintain the character's humanity through that is excellent. Like he is mm-hmm. a phenomenal performer, but even through all that makeup, he is a phenomenal performer. And
oh yeah, for sure.
He's excellent in everything he does, but he's despicable in this show. But as you grow to learn more about what made him this way, you start rooting for him. And mm-hmm. I love when shows can do that. I mean, I love talking about the concept of like the Hound in Game of Thrones, right? Or even Jaime Lannister in Game of Thrones, where at the beginning of these shows, you know, that show, I was like, I don't really like those people at all. And by the end, I'm like, oh, please don't die. Like, please mm-hmm. live, keep mm-hmm. living. And for them to be able to do that with this character in one season is fantastic writing. And, you know, again, just he's such a flawed character, and he'd be the antagonist in so many other stories, but he's still charming. He's funny. And yeah, those one-liners, man, I enjoyed his character so, so much. I have to mention two others quickly. Darcy, you know, I remember you were mentioning you were surprised to see Moises Arias on the show. You knew him from, I guess, what, Disney Channel days?
Disney Channel, Nickelodeon, yeah. that prime time of you know, live action kids shows, and we were growing up, and
yeah.
He had a bit role in almost all of them, it seems. And seeing him in this, it is a far, far jump from where we saw him.
Huge.
In those Nickelodeon shows. He is killing it in this show, as he's again playing one of these vault dwellers, and just again his route in exploring these vaults, because anything like the games, vaults aren't all they're cracked up to be, and the way that he is that grounded storyline that we're following through these vaults is it's so cool.
Yeah. I was telling you earlier that I kind of was getting very young and very like sort of, you know, not obviously not like not on that exact caliber. People, don't take my words too too heavily, but he was giving me Kieran Culkin vibes. And I don't think it's just because he's a younger brother, but yeah, getting to sort of follow his journey and how we kind of keep our connection to the vaults through him is fantastic. And then I want to give an honorary mention to Johnny Pemberton, who you listening might know as the ice cream store customer in Ant-Man, or more likely as Bo from Superstore. He plays Thaddeus in this show, and I honestly like that we got to see him a little bit in the first episode. I love that we get to see him a little bit more as the season goes on. I think much like Zach Cherry, who's also in this show, do a flip, Spider-Man. I just never realized how many times these gentlemen were going to show up in the things that I love. And I'm so happy because every time they do, I'm smiling ear to ear. And I just love them in their performances. They're fantastic.
Yeah, again, those two are known for their more comedic roles and their bit parts in these movies or series that we're so familiar watching. So to get to spend more time with them, and they're still bringing that levity to, again, this dark wasteland, it fits so well for Fallout. Because, again, that Fallout always is very tongue-in-cheek when they're telling stories. There's always characters that are just there to make a joke, and that's kind of what I feel like some of these characters are, but there's also still meaning behind everything they're doing.
Yes.
And that's the thing. Like, all these characters in this story don't feel out of place or shoved in just for the sake of having exposition done. They're all there for a reason,
a yeah,
and for a purpose. And that's what I think the show nails so well, is that it set out to tell a story and it told that story incredibly well.
There are a bunch of cameos in this show. I'm not going to spoil any, but in one of the trailers, there is you do hear a voice. It's a very recognizable voice, and I loved seeing them in the show as well, but I'm just going to leave it at that. They're if you know, you know. But let's talk about the obviously, again, spoiler free, but let's get into like the story and the pacing of the show. I think the show manages to perfectly capture the rapid shifts in tone that the game is known for, right? Like, this entire review, we've been talking about the contrasting nature of goofy moments, laughing, and then drama, and then, you know, sadness or disgustingness. And, you know, normally in a lot of shows, if they were to move so quickly between them, it'd be a little bit jarring. But somehow in this, they've captured it. One moment I'm scared, one moment I'm grossed out, one moment I'm laughing again. And just the way that they're able to sort of drip drama throughout is a testament to these directors and this cast. And again, I think that's such a hard thing to pull off, but it's so integral to, again, that vibe of Fallout that I'm so happy they nailed it.
Yeah, again, the story, we can't get into much, but the story is incredible in this in this episode, and it fits so well into the larger universe of Fallout, because, again, the way that Fallout tells the stories in the games is very, you know, you got to look to try and find these deep lore dives, kind of like, you know, almost like a Bloodborne or Eldering, but not to that level where you have to scour hundreds of pages of stuff to find out what's going on in the universe. It's a bit more easy to digest than that, but again, it is so personal, because depending on where you go in the game, you might find a different storyline or end somewhere else. But the way that this show manages to kind of capture the vibe of those quests, where one episode will remind you of something you do in the game, but still feel unique because it's telling a new story for this game, for this show. It's so cool how they're able to do that, because, again, like you're saying, it's inspired by the games, but not having to draw so heavily from them really lends itself to tell this really cool kind of, you know, mystery almost. There's what's going on in this wasteland is the biggest mystery out there. And the way that the show navigates it and winds you through this wasteland is so cool.
Well, and I mean, that's gotta be a big plus for people that, you know, have grown up with the games, because you're not getting a story that could have been translated incorrectly. Like, you know, they're not leaving, oh, that was my favorite part, they left it out, or they didn't focus on this part enough. It's a whole new story set in the world. And as long as they nail the vibe and they get those Easter eggs in, because there are a lot of Easter eggs.
So many jam-packed Easter eggs, jeez.
In the show. And so I think that was the best way to go about it. From a pacing perspective, I will say there was a bit of an issue I had with the first episode of this season. We kind of talked about it off air, but you know, I think it's very segmented. I think I totally understand giving, you know, our main players, Lucy, Maximus, and the Ghoul, their time to be properly introduced, but it did feel like a bit of a slog. It felt a little bit like we sort of trudged through it, and I was enjoying it, but I think once the series has its footing and we get to explore the world and we get to see these characters and their paths crossing, that's when the magic of this show really shines.
Yeah, I have to agree with you there for 100%. Again, that first episode, it is the longest runtime of the season two, and it does take a while. It is very much establishing where these characters are at the beginning of the story, and it does, because they're all in their own spot and they're just starting on this journey, it does feel very segmented. But like you said, that once we get into that second episode and we start seeing these stories kind of bleed into each other a bit more, it just hits the ground running, and just from there, it only gets better. Like I have not had a more bingeable show in a long time where I'm just like, I need to keep going with this. And I'm not sure it's because I felt such a nostalgia for the games or just the universe, or I think it's just the story in this show is so incredibly interesting. And the way they explore it and the way you're getting a little bit more each episode while the bigger mystery is still being revealed as you go out. It's so cool. They handle it so well.
And it's, you know, I think by episode three, I wrote down, like, from what I remember of the time that I played Fallout 3, like, this feels like the game. I think I think the only other area there, again, without spoiling anything, there is something that causes our characters, like all of our main characters, to kind of go off the sort of the trajectory that they're on, which I think, to me, I part of me was kind of like, I don't know how I feel about that, because the integrity of the characters feels like it's a little bit lost, at least from their motivations. But at the same time, I'm also thinking back to all the times I've ever played a Bethesda game and I've not done the main mission and I've gone off to do something else, and it's felt just as rewarding and fun and distracting, maybe not as realistic in the sense that, you know, the main campaign is the biggest problem for my main character and I'm off collecting Nuka caps or whatever. But I mean, that's not what the episode is. But I think there is one episode in particular that I did sort of feel like, I didn't know how to fully feel about it, but I understand the reasoning behind it. And it does feel like their motivation for it was to give you that sense of side mission, if you will.
Yeah, side quest, 100%. I think I know what episode you're talking about too, and I did feel it a bit too, but again, that it felt like any RPG, not even just a Bethesda, just any RPG when you're in an open world, I always get distracted by all those other things on the map before I go to the main quest. So it felt very much like that, when it was almost fun in the sense that it's like, okay, we're going to take a bit of time to explore into that, because you wouldn't when you're playing the game, so why not spend a bit of time before we go back to the main storyline? It was cool.
But I did love how we never really just abandoned any aspect of the characters and their place of origin. I think a lot of shows, especially shows that have characters going on a journey, you know, when we leave Hobbiton, we don't see Hobbiton again until the very end. whereas with this show, you know, Lucy, it's in the trailer. She leaves the vault. But then we get moments back with her brother Norm, where we get to keep exploring that part of this world, right? The flashbacks with the Ghoul, or the consistent connection to the elements that we see from the Brotherhood of Steel, like the entire time on the show, this entire season, it's this really good balance of getting, you know, to see the world building even outside of our main three characters.
Again, everything in the show is there for a purpose, and these side characters give us new windows into the world and reveal something that we wouldn't have gotten if we had just stuck with the main three. So again, it's a testament to the storytelling, the fact that they're able to handle so many characters and their stories and still manage to work them together to tell this incredible epic journey.
Yeah, let's get to our we've been gushing about this show. Yeah, yeah, like a gulper. but I want to know your overall thoughts and final score on this first season, which we're going to be rating on a scale of 1 to 5 Nuka-Cola bottle caps.
Yeah, well, I think it's pretty obvious where I'll be going, and I'm sure some of it has to do with the bias I have towards my love of the games and everything like that. But this show is exactly what I wanted from a Fallout adaptation. It nails the wasteland. The story is intriguing. We're getting to see some of the mystery behind the world, the greater world that we, again, is only teased at in the games. And I feel like this show is the biggest dive into that lore and the why behind it all that we've gotten to date in any of the Fallout games. So I am loving the show 100%. This is an easy 5 out of 5 Nuka-Cola caps for me because, again, I love the games so much. This show is doing such a good job of bringing it to life, and I cannot wait to talk about it with other fans of the game. Again, my buddy who I played the game with, I'm 100% telling him we got to sit down and watch this because he will enjoy every minute of it. And I cannot wait to, again, to experience this with the fandom, basically, because I feel like there's going to be a lot of good things to talk about from the show.
You're kind of watching this the same way you played the game, right? Like, you watch it, and then he's going to watch it. You got to watch exactly. Him watch it.
Yeah, and then we'll watch it together and all that. Yeah. Oh, yeah. This has so much rewatchability in this show, too, because, absolutely. Again, as a fan of the game, there are so many Easter eggs in there that I'm sure I missed a bunch my first viewing, and I can't wait to go back and, again, do another deep dive into this universe with such a great cast.
Yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed Fallout. I was looking forward to it, but then I heard the names Walton Goggins, I heard Jonathan Nolan and Lisa Joy, and that just pushed my hype even higher. You know, I loved Westworld so much, and Jonathan Nolan recently in an interview did say that he does want to complete. Obviously, he's focusing on Fallout now, thank goodness, but he does want to complete Westworld eventually. But I think, you know, much like Westworld, Nolan and Lisa Joy's ability to just kind of give us such good world building and their ability to translate from an original source material, that might be what they do best. Because they've done it with this show. The show it's also like authentically hilarious without ever feeling cheesy. Like we said, it's dark, it's twisted, it's bloody, but it never feels like too much or out of place. And the music combined with that ability to shift in tone while still feeling so believable, that's the magic of Fallout. That's the magic that they were able to bring to life, and I'm so happy that this show has been renewed for a season 2. I think, you know, outside of a slow, methodical, rocky first episode, you know, the show finds its footing so quickly that it's easy to kind of forgive a little bit of that. And it gets to a place where, like you said, like Darcy, you want to binge watch every episode because, I mean, listen, every episode ends in a cliffhanger. I'm just going to say it. I don't think that's a spoiler. I think, you know, you're going to get to the end of the episode and just be like, it's 2 a.m.
Okay, next episode.
But I'm going to click play on the next one. Yeah, 100%. 100%. I will say just really quickly at the very end here, a little strange to now see shows designed for ads on a streaming platform.
On a streaming service? Yeah. That
was
is
a little
weird.
Bit, it kind of irked me a little bit. I don't know if I enjoyed that too much. I don't think it really ruins the show in any sense of the means, but just, it was just one of those things that just was like, are we back to cable? How did this happen? How did we get all the way back here? but other than that, no, I am so impressed with what they've done here. I'm going to give Fallout, you know, Darcy, I was going to give it a 4.5. I think, you know what, I want to play the game. The fact that this did make me want to go back and play the game, I remember people saying that about The Witcher. That happened again with The Last of Us. It's happening here. I want to go back and play the game, and I'm going to give Fallout 5 out of 5 Nuka-Cola bottle caps. But that is it for this review of Fallout Season 1. Again, I'm stoked there's a Season 2. It's been announced. It's going to happen. I'm so happy, and I can't wait to get back into this this world and this story. But we hope you enjoyed this review, and if you did, make sure to subscribe to us wherever you like to listen to podcasts, if you haven't already. And if you want to write into the show with your thoughts on this series or any of the shows or movies we cover, well, let me just get... I'm just going to send a message here on my beep, boop, beep, pip boy over to Darcy in Vault 32 so he can let you know how you can reach us.
A sure thing. They can reach us at wearegeekcentric@gmail.com. That's wearegeekcentric@gmail.com. Or if that's too much like coming out of the vault after 200 years of hiding away from the post-apocalyptic world, you can reach us on Instagram at wearegeekcentric or on Twitter at geekcentricyt.
Dude, apocalyptic is not an easy word to say.
Throw a post in front of that, post, too. It's just blah, blah.
Say it 10 times fast. keep in mind, you upstanding listeners, we also have a ton of other great episodes covering the latest in movies, TV shows, including our recent spoiler-free reviews for Alex Garland's Civil War, Monkey Man, Three Body Problem, X-Men 97, Invincible Season 2 Part 2, Kung Fu Panda 4, Extraordinary Season 2, and Dune Part 2. We also have our ongoing watch club for the final season of Star Wars The Bad Batch, with our latest episode covering the episodes 10 and 11, and our next episode out real soon. So be sure to join our Discord using the link in our description if you want to chime in and share your thoughts on, you know, Fallout or Star Wars The Bad Batch or anything we cover on the podcast. We also have some great interviews out now, like our most recent interview with the executive producer of the Apple original series, Simon Kinberg. Justin sat down with him to discuss the series and how it pays homage to the classic film noir genre while giving audiences something fresh. As a self-proclaimed geek, Simon also shares what he would want to see for the X-Men, having worked on the X-Men himself. So go check out that interview and all of our interviews, both here on your podcast service of choice or over on YouTube at youtube.com/geekcentric. Subscribe, leave a review. It helps us so much. We have to repopulate the earth together. So a 5-star review would just go a very long way. Maybe a nice thumbs up, like a little old vault boy. What's his name again?
They're Pip Boys, Vault Tech Pip Boys.
Vault Tech Pip Boy. But Darcy, thank you so much for joining me for this rad spoiler-free review and rad-free review, by the way. You don't need any rad away after listening. And as we say, love ya.
Laters.